So should I go ahead and call this meeting to order? This is the East County Board of Zoning Adjustments, and it is Thursday, September 25th, 2025. Apologize for getting started a little bit late, made a little technical difficulty. But moving on, you can go ahead and call the meeting to order. And would you like to do roll call?
Chair Houston.
Here.
Member Eddie.
Here.
Vice Chair Kinlaw.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Should we do the pledge of allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Maybe what about open forum? Do we have anybody online?
We have of the attendees on open forum, we have no hand.
Thank you. Moving on to field trip report.
Yes, we have no field trip report.
Thank you. How about neighborhood preservation and zoning ordinance update?
For this meeting, we have no neighborhood preservation zoning ordinance update.
Thank you. Alcohol beverage sale regulations or administrative hearing?
And we have no alcohol beverage sales.
All right. Then that moves us to the approval of the minutes from our previous meeting. Does anybody have any edits or modifications they want to make? Okay, so do I have a motion to approve?
I make a motion to approve minutes.
And I second.
Chair Smith.
Aye.
Member Eddy.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hoff.
Abstain.
Measure passed from the meeting.
Thank you. Amy, what about the consent calendar?
We have no items on the consent calendar.
Thank you. Then moving on to the regular calendar, first item is the conditional use permit for the Superstop.
Correct. And the item number one has been continued to an undetermined date. Will not be heard at this time.
All right. Thank you. Item number two is the conditional use permit for KDIQ Alpha Media.
Yes. For item number two, the application number is KLN 2025-82. This is to allow the continued operation of a radio transmission facility with no modifications. The property is located on Mendenhall Road. The closest address for this site is 10625 Mendenhall Road. The applicant is KAIQ Alpha Media LLC. Michael Stockwell is the contact applicant, and this project is category that pursuant to section 15301 class one for example. Shown here is a map showing the Del Valle Road, 1 mile to the west, and this property is off Mendenhall Road to the south of Mendenhall Road. And in the aerial view, we see that this facility well screened from neighboring properties and from traffic on Mendenhall Road. And then this depicts the site plan with the lease area. That's roughly 400 square feet, and the facility itself, including house. And this is a photo of the facility. Again, there will be no changes to the facility are proposed, and the subject property that we move across Mendenhall Road. One can see it also screened by large oak trees. And so staff recommends approval of the conditional use permit, including the continued conditions of approval, the 17 conditions of approval, which also include the expiration of the permit in 10 years time. So staff, question.
Thank you. There are any public comments?
There are no hands raised. The applicant is present. The applicant wishes to speak. Otherwise, if you wish to speak, you can use the raise hand function on your Zoom. Thing is. There is Michael Stockwell with KTIQ.
I just wanted to be able to state that the radio station is also a valuable part of the community with regards to the emergency broadcast system and the fact that we provide emergency alerts for the community.
Thank you. Any questions for the applicant? We can close public comment. Thank you.
Motion for staff recommendations.
I second that.
Chair Susan?
Aye.
Member Eddie?
Aye.
Vice Chair Imhoff?
Yes.
Motion passes 3-0.
All right, thank you. That moves us to item number 3, which is the Brownin presentation by Mayor.
Karen Fox with the Deputy County Council with the County Council presenting to you today. Summary and Brown Act requirements of the Brown Act. Ralph M. Brown Act, formerly known as the Brown Act, California's it was active in 1953. And spearheaded by Senator Brown, who represented the Central Coast of California, and eventually became a health professional. So the Brown Act came about, next slide, please. Oh, no, this is good. This is good. Brown Act came about in part out of the result of a San Francisco Chronicle series of articles about how essentially public operations were being performed behind closed doors. Decisions were being performed behind closed doors. There was no open meeting law previous to this. California existed for 100 years without one. And as a result of public outcry, there was legislative support for passing this. So it's so close to home, it's kind of warm in that respect. Excellent. Guiding principle, it's the public's business must be conducted in public. It seems sort of self-evident, but it apparently wasn't. with ample opportunity for public participation. Next slide. So who's subject to it? It's a very broad net. Any body or standing committee created by law or other formal action of a board. As we know, the BZAs were created by the board, and they exist pursuant to the administrative code of the county, and so they are definitely subject to Brown. The overarching idea is that all meetings of a legislative body, being the board or local agency created thereby, must be open to the public, and all persons must be permitted to attend any meeting of that body or but there are a couple components of this statement. It seems compact and sort of simple, but there are a couple points. First really is what's a meeting? Next slide. So a meeting occurs whenever the majority of the board in or agency in question, in this case, the East County BZA, comes together at the same time, in the same place, and that includes teleconferences and other niche occasions, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But they come together, a majority comes together at the same time, at the same place, and they have a discussion on the EBZA business. And the reason for your coming together isn't relevant. It could be, well, we got together at my kid's school event. But if you talk about EBZA business and there's a majority of you there, all of a sudden it could be a violation. And so there's not really an intent. Next slide. So yeah, just broadening that out, meetings can be formal or informal. They can involve either a discussion or an action, both, and they can be in person or through technology. So things like retreats can be a meeting, site visits, if you happen to run into each other when you're touring an upcoming action item, that could be a meeting if there is business discussed. Social gatherings or networking, even before or after a noticed meeting, that's a real trap to land where because you're all together because it's a meeting, and then start chatting before the meeting starts about a subject matter that's on the agenda, and then all of a sudden that could be a violation. Next slide. So yeah, I mentioned pre-meetings and post-meetings are traps for the unwary. Serial meetings are a real trick. Those are communications, direct or indirect, that relate to the East County BZA's business. Next slide. The most common types of serial meetings are chains and hubs and spokes. A chain is one member talks to another member who then talks to another member, and all of a sudden a majority has essentially been deemed to have met. And so that's one thing one to be real careful about. If you do talk to, and for this board, quorum's two. So it's really tricky to communicate with each other about a matter that is East County BZA business, either on the agenda or not. So you just have to be really careful about it. You know, with bigger bodies where the quorum is five or six, it's not as tricky if you just want to talk to one member, but for this one, it's tricky. The other type is hub and spoke. So one person talks to three different people, or in this case, one other person. You need a hub and the spoke. So those are serial meetings, and there are situations to essentially. The most conservative advice I could give you is just never talk about East County BZA stuff unless we're all here in the room. And you know, we go. I know it's cumbersome, but it's like the most conservative. Okay, next slide. So serial meetings can also occur through technology, and the informality of our modern technology is really seductive, and a lot of people can get into trouble over email, over social media, over phones, over text. I mean, you know, we all text 50 times a day, and it's so informal, but at the same time, those are communications that the record applies to, so you have to be really careful about that. In one instance, about 20 years ago, the Attorney General reviewed email communications of a public agency, and they determined that a majority of the body violate the Brown Act if they emailed each other regarding a current issue under the body's jurisdiction. It doesn't matter if the emails were also sent to the secretary or chairperson of the agency, or if the emails were posted on the agency's website, or if the emails were printed and made available during the meeting about the item was discussed. The Attorney General said because those types of communications would not be available at the time they were had to persons who might be interested or to persons who don't have internet access, they would constitute a violation of the record. So a very technical interpretation of what seems like an innocuous situation where members were trying to provide all the information that they had, but it was past the time. So they couldn't make that information available to the public at the time the Brown Act demanded it.
So with that,
yeah, I was gonna pause for a few.
So if, so I know when I was chair, I got emails from staff with agenda items, things like that, and I would reply back. I couldn't legally inform my colleagues why were the agendas changing or things like that.
It's a good question. Next slide. So you can certainly ask staff questions,
mm-hmm.
and they can answer them, and staff can provide you information. But it's the sharing of essentially positions or views on that information is what the brown prohibits. So you can certainly say, I received this additional information on an agenda item from staff. Here it is. You can probably even say, interesting, but what you won't want to say is, well, this really changes my thoughts on this, or something like that. That gets into a viewpoint or an opinion of a position on a matter that really should be held.
And can we confer with each other about factual information, like the location of today's meeting? If Frank had texted me and said, do you know where it is? And if I said that to him, it's factual information.
Factual about location of the meeting,
right,
is fine. The time of the meeting is
right.
Fine. Even factual information like, is this item on the agenda? That's yeah. Okay.
Okay.
But anything that is substantive matter on the agenda, right? That's okay.
Well, let's say we went for a tour a year ago. And that item was being brought back up. And the tour was public information. The meeting they had after the tour was public information. And now it's getting brought up again. I can't call him and go, hey, when we were on that tour, did we see two giraffes and an elephant? And he'd go, three elephants and one giraffe. I can ask that question because we were in public forum, correct?
No, because the public discussion that you would have about giraffes and elephants, that's not public.
It was because we talked about it in the tour that we had a year ago, and we talked about it after the tour at a meeting. I'm asking him, how did that meeting go? I don't remember.
Right.
So it was public information.
That was
an open session.
But it could be deemed that you were communicating a position or communicating a direction. And so I would avoid it. Yeah, frankly, I would avoid it.
But in for an open forum, like right now, I can ask him, hey, a year ago, did we see what we saw, or am I mistaken?
Yeah. As long as it's on the agenda, yeah.
Definitely. Well, I understand if someone brings it up in public forum in the 3 minutes they have to speak,
mm-hmm.
we don't talk on that because it's not agendized.
That's right.
So, yeah, but if we bring up item three and we're talking about elephants and giraffes, then I can go, hey, what did you remember about that? So then in public forum, he can say yes.
Yeah, let's see that. That's important. Yeah, if someone, and we'll talk about general comment from the public in a sec, but if someone brought it up in general public comment, you really aren't supposed to respond to yeah. that in any way. But you can say, hey, that's an interesting question. I would love to agendize that for the next meeting. And then we can all talk about it. And then, it puts things off because you can't do it immediately and they don't want to do it now. But that's the
problem. So earlier, the example that you cited, and you said it was a Brown Act violation. So what is the violation? Is that something that just goes on record? Or what are the repercussions?
Yeah, there's, so we'll get into it, but a number of different things. There's actually potential criminal penalty. I don't think in that case it rose to that level. But the most usual repercussion is the action item that's taken, that action done.
Okay.
So it has to be done all over.
Okay.
Okay. Next slide. What isn't a meeting? These are examples: attendance of a quorum of the body at a national conference or a regional conference, a local meeting that's open to the public that you didn't go, it's not your meeting that you go to, social, recreational events. They're all okay. Really, the key is the discussion of business. Because as public officials, you can't be printed to go places. interact with the public. It's just a matter of the ABC of business. That's the touchstone. What about social media? Next slide, please. So social media, if you've been able to avoid it, then I applaud you. But for the majority of us who use social media, again, the informality of it and the disconnectedness of it can present a threat. It's even more disconnected than texting, but at the same time, it's more aggregated than texting. Because if I text you, no one else can see them. But if I make a post on someone's Instagram post, everyone else in the world, if it's a public account, can see it. And so there's actually newish governmental regulations are actually codified about this. In the context of social media, a meeting does not include separate conversations you might have. But remember, because this board's quorum is two, very difficult to avoid a Brown Act violation if you discuss board business outside of the meeting. And because the quorum number is so low.
So if a decision, if this board has already made a decision and it's on record, it's been through the public Brown Act procedures, are we allowed to talk about that, like past actions? Because it's already concluded.
I would avoid, particularly in social media contexts.
Yeah.
But in general, I would avoid talking about the decision-making process, why you acted in a certain way, because most of your actions are appealable. And if it's appealed and then it comes back to you, then all of a sudden,
yeah,
it hasn't been final.
It hasn't concluded, yeah, really.
I mean, okay. If it's a year from now and you say, oh, that thing wasn't that, well, not a Brown Act violation, but my advice is always to try.
Okay.
Generally, don't want to, you can answer questions on social media from the public. And solicit information from the public on BZA matters. That's okay because you're not providing any
as an individual.
Yeah, as an individual.
But not if you're doing it as a group.
And not if you're weighing in any way.
Okay.
Tell me why you don't like this. That's a relevant question. Tell me what your thoughts are about this. Probably not, because you're not implying a position on the outside of the meeting. Next slide. I think we've gone over this sufficiently, but just like email and just like hub and spoke communication, social media can create the occurrence of a meeting. No discussion among members about specific business that's specific to BZA. And also, no responding directly to communications regarding a matter that is within the subject matter of the board. So if someone reaches out to you through your Instagram account and says, hey, I saw this item that's coming up on your agenda, how do you feel about it? Or which way is the wind blowing? Whatever, something seems innocuous. Definitely. The government code says you shouldn't be engaging in that way, pre-decision, sort of before the meeting.
Even as an individual?
Even as an individual. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because at that point, it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, Vice Chair Yamoff goes on to that Instagram page and reads what you said. So,
But when we're in a meeting sometimes, all of a sudden, someone in the audience says something like, whatever, there was no elephants there.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at him and go, how do you know that? That's not my question for him. Not a question for me as to staff. It's, you don't know if that guy's telling the truth or not telling the truth.
Right.
So in the past, you never engage. You try not to engage with the complaining or the next door neighbor. I'm just using that for an example. the question has to go to staff because they have to figure it out. You know, that's what my job is, to see who's lying and who's not, correct?
It's a complex question because ultimately you are the adjudicator. This board is the adjudicator, and it's their part of the responsibility and role is to determine what you think is credible and what's not. And so if someone during public comment says, you know, this is what I saw, you can certainly ask questions of them. Well, what day is that? What time did you see it? Can you provide a small background? You're not, but what you want to avoid it is sort of being pretty civil. I really want to support you in what you're saying, so can you give me more information? So that now sounds very civil. But if you're just asking clarifying questions, so you said this.
What about media inquiry after the meeting's over? A reporter emails says, I watched the meeting or whatever, and can you clarify your remarks or can you expand upon what you said at the meeting?
You know, from a Brown perspective, again, we're talking about a situation that could potentially be appealed, and in fact, it's printed in the newspaper, then all of a sudden it could be an up and spoke, mm-hmm. where you told this person something and they're going to tell another board member is that what? So I would counsel you to avoid stating anything further than what was stated at the meeting. We supported the staff's recommendation, or we denied the staff's recommendation because the information was there, was not there.
Well, I've pointed them back to transcript. I've said, you need to see the staff and get a copy of the transcript. And then I get back, they don't have one. Hey, but what to do it for you, but...
Well, all these meetings are definitely internal.
It's not they're recorded.
They're recorded and provided.
And how frequently or how quickly is that made available? Is it instant?
No, I don't think it's instant.
The video recording, if the meeting is held at 9, so we had Webster yesterday, that was at 5:00, 5 p.m. It doesn't take long to get the video uploaded.
Okay, so it is available almost immediately.
The video. Describe minutes.
Not the transcript.
Okay. Minutes may take upwards of a week. Those don't get posted until they are approved by the board at the following meeting.
But they can go look at the video. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. No, this is great. I have a pause for questions for me. Once again, shifting gears just to more general Brown requirements. Go to the next slide. Meetings, the location and time, they must be held within the county. They must occur at the time and place, either prescribed by ordinance resolution or bylaws. It may have some information in our bylaws about meeting times, but it can be changed with the discretion of the chair, so they're not part of that. That's why we don't have 6 p.m. meeting at all. The bylaws talk about that potential, but they also talk about chair discretion to change that if necessary. And if there are any approved teleconference locations, which we'll get into in just a sec, the agenda should reference that as well. Next slide. Okay, teleconferencing. So the board can meet via teleconference, so different physical locations connected by electronic means, either audio or video or both. All locations must be identified on the agenda and any notice provided. Each location must have public access and it must give the public the opportunity to speak. So if you're considering having a teleconference meeting, both of the locations where the board members are accessible to the public, and a member of the public would theoretically be able to speak at either location.
But that's all, it's all electronic, so it's automatically made available if you're using an open forum like this.
Correct. If you were linked electronically, mm-hmm. either by video or audio. And you met the other requirements of the location being posted in the agenda and the location being available to the public to attend.
But the location is virtual.
No, it has to be physical.
So like during the pandemic, we were meeting all virtually. So there was an exception being made for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The pandemic was a big exception. So until many of these laws and those okay. exceptions have been sunsetted.
So now under our normal circumstances, teleconference is actually on top of a physical location.
If a board member wants to teleconference to the meeting, then it would be an additional location. Is that what we have to...
But where they're teleconferencing from has to be made available.
That's correct.
So if it's you're in your car on your phone,
yeah,
and you're moving.
I think 2 years ago I was on vacation going somewhere, and they called in. If I remember right. I was on I-5, I had to pass out a couple of time to put somewhere to Canada or something, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yes, you say where you're at, huh?
Those could have been under COVID rules. But generally if you're going to teleconference, it has to be from a location that's posted beforehand and accessible.
And I'll meet a county director.
Well, a quorum needs to be able to.
Okay.
Okay. So 2 out of 3 you need.
So if we're.
Oh, if we're, in the county.
So if we're. So if one of us wasn't physically here, but the quorum was here,
mm-hmm.
I stated that I'm visiting family in Nevada. Then I can teleconference in.
Yeah. I mean, let's say one of you was at a conference and you knew ahead of time and you notified the secretary and posted in the agenda. You found a location that was available in public and you were able to video or audio link with the rest of the board members. Yeah, that would be crystal. But both the other two board members would need to be in the public.
So I can touch.
So if I'm in Tracy getting trapped in the apartment, I'm in Tracy.
I know.
I'm on the phone.
We have to be here.
Yeah, well, you know, not here. You got to be in the county on your phone is what you're saying.
No,
you got to be here.
You could be out because there's a quorum.
I mean, he's in Reno. I'm in Stockton, no, Tracy getting parked.
That
and I'm on the phone.
That is
you're
a,
saying
we don't know.
I have to call you when I cross the canal and say, okay, now I'm in the county or I have to be in Mr. Chair.
Well, in that instance, because there's only 3 of you, quorum is 2. You'd have to either be at a teleconference location in the county, so not in your car, not on your mobile phone, you know, but at a location where the public that is posted in the agenda and the public.
So you'd have to know ahead of time you were going to be at the track.
More fun than I'm talking out too much.
Hell, you'll have
1:30.
But hypothetically, okay. I'm home with something contagious and I'm staying here home and teleconferencing in.
Yep.
In fact, you put everyone here. And they're here. So they're in Alameda County, but my home is now open to the public.
Well,
knock on the door. Hey,
just in your front yard.
You have to get past my knock. It's a hypothetical, but I mean, no, it's then.
Good one.
So is that, I mean, but technically that's what's happening is my home is now open to the public.
Not in those circumstances.
Okay.
So we can skip ahead to something.
Sure.
One more. There we go. Okay. Remote attendance, which is not teleconferencing.
Oh.
So remote attendance is permitted limited circumstances. They're called the limited circumstances are just cause or emergency circumstances. Essentially, you must request at the earliest opportunity possible to attend remotely. The BCA must approve that participation request.
At the meeting, at the public meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
And you must attend using both video and audio.
Both? Okay.
Yes.
So you can zoom in?
You can zoom in.
Okay.
No problems. As long as you met the... as long as you met the requirement of it being just cause or for emergency circumstances.
Well, it seems like contagion would be just cause.
Next slide. Thank you. So these are examples of just costs.
Okay.
You know, childcare or caregiving need, contagious illness, or a compromised family member, a qualifying mental or physical disability, or, you know, if you're traveling a beneficial family business, sort of almost at the last minute, those are just costs for attending remote. And so in this instance, would not need the formalities of a teleconference. So not in a location that's accessible to the public where the public can get a comment. And it doesn't have to be noted in each at the time. It can be, and ideally it would be. Ideally, you give your board enough notice ahead of time, they would put on an agenda and it would say, where's Chair Susan to meet with us remotely. And here's why. This is the reason why.
Let's just say the meeting was going to be August 3rd.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in Seattle. Derek's going to be in Reno. I call Derek and go, hey, I'm going to be in Seattle on the 3rd. Can you have the meeting? He's the chair. He calls up, says, okay, we might have the meeting on the 3rd. It's that simple, correct? Because we get agendized meetings. And all of a sudden, 2 days before, meeting's canceled. We can cancel the meeting 2 days before, too, correct?
Well, if you don't have quorum, yeah, you can.
Yeah, right. So it's almost easier because there's only three of us. I'm just, okay, I'm not going to be around. You're going to be around. I'm not going to change my plans to come decide on one cell site.
So I'm still a little bit fuzzy between teleconferencing and in remote.
Mm-hmm.
So when does it rise in level of teleconference?
So teleconferencing can be done anytime. You don't have to have a just cause or emergency service.
Yes.
So long as the location that your teleconference from is noticed on the agenda and is available to the public, you don't have to have a reason for it. It can't, if you teleconference, it can't take a quorum of the body out of account. So that's another
right
category. Just cause or remote attendance for just cause and emergency circumstances, very circumscribed. And it has to be approved ahead of time. So there's no guarantees that it would be approved. And you have to fit within the JAG to suggest funds or emergency circumstances.
So procedurally, if one of us called and said, we need to come in remote because of contagion or whatever, that request comes into Damien, and he gets a hold of all the members to ask for a vote?
No, the vote would happen in the meeting.
Oh, right. Okay, that's right. Meeting in the very beginning, so he's going to actually put it on the agenda, and it's going to be an action.
If it's possible to do that,
yeah.
The request is, nature of an emergency is that it's unpredictable, so it doesn't have to be on the agenda.
Okay.
But
it has to be addressed at the meeting.
Okay. Yes, that's right.
So I think in saying this is why we want more things on the agenda instead of one like today, right? We want to have a full meeting so we don't do all this work and come here and go, this is canceled. How we're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance to leave. It's kind of happened almost today. It was pretty simple. We could get these together and have a bigger meeting and set a meeting more often.
Very
cool. makes our lives, I think, because we're basically volunteers.
Well, it's more productive to have a full agenda. I agree.
Yeah.
And there was some more items.
So next slide is just emergency circumstances. This is the general summary of emergency circumstances. It's some physical or family emergency that prevents you from. Next slide. You were asking about process. So, there are limitations on remote access. 2 times per year for this board.
Mm.
If you met more often, it could increase up to 5, but because of the frequency that this board meets, it's twice a year that you can attend remotely. So just as it's written, you submit a request at your earliest opportunity and a general description of your just cause or emergency circumstances. It will be added, can be added in the agenda. Should be heard at the beginning of the meeting.
I got a question for you. I don't know if you can answer it, but was this called a lecture, a school, whatever you're giving us, was it brought up by the public, or this is something that you're just doing because you're doing it?
It's something that we do.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Okay, next slide. Shifting gears a little, notice and agenda requirements. Regular meetings like our meeting today, they must be posted 72 hours in advance. Special meetings won't require 24 hours notice. And the agendas must describe each item with enough detail so the person of ordinary intelligence can determine whether the item was of interest. So not very understanding, but must be on the agenda at least.
Real quick, you have my email.
Yeah.
I want this, all this here emailed to you.
Sure. Okay, next slide. An appeal to our better angels. Why does it matter? A body subject to the Brown Act, like this board, may not discuss, may not act on items that are not on the agenda or that are beyond the reasonable scope of the agenda. And the reason why is because that's really the way the public knows and is able to effectuate its ability to participate. So if we start talking about things that aren't on the agenda or getting outside of what the agenda says, then people were not aware that discussion was going to take place. So they haven't had the opportunity to participate. So that's why, for me, the agenda could be scrutinized very closely. For most folks, it's not that important, but I always want to make sure that the agenda gives the public, reasonable notice that something's going to be discussed. And then they can't say we didn't.
So if we ask a code enforcement representative about an item that had happened prior, we're saying, can you just give us a status update? That's actually outside of the...
Yeah, I would ask for that to be agendized at the next meeting.
So in saying that, great question. So now on our agenda, we're going to put another item on our agenda, and it's going to be almost what you just said.
Right.
I don't know if we have to motion this to you guys, but go ahead and almost recite what you just said.
Right.
On the agenda, we're going to have an asked and question on past
code enforcement
issues on what's happening, an update.
Yeah, we'd like status update on
that. Yep, status update on the agenda, status update on.
But the particular ones that we're interested in is not every case they've ever brought to our attention.
The last 6 months.
Yeah.
3 months.
So can we.
Because that always is hanging above our heads, right? You guys agree with that? You know what I mean?
That's a tricky one because when you use a general agenda item like that, it doesn't necessarily provide person with the information they might want to know that a particular item is going to be updated.
So if we had a standing item, I'm just going to use this as an example for now, that said code enforcement update on status for the following cases,
that would be acceptable.
Okay.
Or what about during board announcements, comments, reports, questions to staff,
those are general statements, and so they're informational in nature, and they aren't being acted on in any way. The public still has an opportunity to comment on those things.
But they're not specific. Like, when we ask that question at the end, like under item L, if we said, hey, is there any update for code enforcement on what happened with this blah, blah, blah?
With the fence that fell down.
Yeah, and I would say probably best to ask staff to agendize that for his.
Okay. And then, so I'm just trying to understand this. Okay. So, what if I see something out on Flynn Road, and knowing that Frank and Lori are very familiar with things, I can't say, hey, you want to know what's going on like this parcel or here, just in general, just getting knowledge from people that actually know what's going on? Is that violation of something that's not even on agenda, just gathering information of, hey, do you know what's going on here? Have you seen this type of conversation? Is that?
You're flirting with the boundaries in that instance. Well, let's assume that what you saw was within the jurisdiction of this board. If it wasn't, then you can have the conversation as you like. But if it is, like I saw a truck dumping soil, for example, that potentially would come within the jurisdiction of the board. And so discussing it with other board members is tricky.
Well, we're not bringing up the board members, we're bringing up the staff to say, you better start investigating this, because I'm getting 15 phone calls a week that this is happening and nothing's getting done.
Yeah.
So, fair.
Well, yeah, but what if it's not even an agenda?
What if it's not?
That I just, well, the Flynn thing we've heard about. But let's just say it's a problem. It's a new one. It sounds like, hey, there, I see all this grading going on, you know, on this parcel. Do you know anything about it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is not, it's never been discussed. I don't know anything about it from the county. Just talking, you know, people are like, no.
And you're doing it here in the office?
No, I'm just, if I see Frank, hey, Frank, did you see the grading over on Tesla?
You know anything about the grading?
You know about the grading? That, and again, questions like that, is that in the conflict?
It's not agendized.
It's not agendized.
Right.
It's
but it's still potentially the board's business. Mm-hmm. And so I would recommend against it. Well, in that instance, though, I would recommend that you reach out to staff and say, hey, I saw this. Seems like it could be a violation of such and such.
Yeah, but he asked me the question and I said, oh, it's so-and-so building a barn pad, got the permit 3 weeks ago, and I'm the one building the pad. It's a question that could be easily answered.
Sure, but it really needs to go through staff, because then that'll prevent the financial report from. In that instance, probably not fully permitted and everything's been done.
That's probably already been heard.
Yeah, probably already been heard.
Yeah, sometimes. No, we wouldn't hear that. We might not hear it.
No, but the residents of body would have heard it, and there would be no chance for it to come before you, because.
No, but we want to know what's going on, because next time we go there and they go, oh, they graded the path, but now they're throwing in $500,000 of dirt on top.
Right. And now all of a sudden.
Now we're making staff aware of the situation.
Yeah.
We didn't know what was going on.
So when in doubt, call Aaron.
Yeah. It's forward about 20 phone calls a month.
Yeah,
and I'm sure you guys get the same calls I get from different people. We have different,
yeah, networks. Yeah,
and it's always acceptable to just say staff invited you to attend that for the next meeting. There's no way. And then you can, and then the staff gets back to you a week later and says, oh, I did some research and it's been fully permitted. It's all good.
Do you realize how slow staff works sometimes?
I think that you get things on the agenda pretty. Yeah. I think that's, they may not have a fully formed answer as to what's going on, but at least it's on the agenda. You can talk about it.
Yeah.
And the public can come to talk to you about it, because they may have some issues that might not be here. So giving them the forum, the ability to do it is all good. Okay, next slide. Limited exceptions. This is these are exceptions to the notice and agenda requirements. There are emergency circumstances that you think that you need to meet immediately, then the agenda requirement, those requirements can be for true emergency circumstances.
And who actually waives it?
Well,
we do, but then we're doing it under the ordinance. That charter does.
The waiving, it's not really that you're waiving it. It's that the public can't challenge the meeting.
Okay.
Because you have, it's a defense.
Okay.
So you didn't agendize that. That's a violation of the ordinance. Brandon didn't say, well, it was.
It was deemed an emergency.
And we had meet because,
right,
for whatever reason.
Right.
I mean, it's hard to imagine a situation where this board would call to action, you know, in less than 24 hours, like what that would be.
Yeah, it's
possible.
There's other boards, so that would happen.
Yes,
a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, next slide.
What was that second one about? Something about 5 days.
Oh, this is just that this is another exception. Something can be continued for up to 5 days from a previous agenda. And yes.
Okay, so we can actually convene again within the 5 days,
right,
and continue talking about the item.
Right. Okay. That would be a special meeting, because you don't meet regularly then. But then that's
okay. Okay.
Okay, we can go ahead one slide. So these are the types of things that don't need to be on the agenda: commendations and announcements, you know, requests to agendize future items. We covered that. Very limited follow-up to a public comment to provide information or direction to staff. So if someone says to you,
elephants all ran down the road.
Right.
We said, staff, we got to stop that from happening here.
Yeah.
And that's...
Which road?
Yeah, right, right, exactly. Yeah.
We did follow which road, and then you can direct staff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those things don't need to be on the agenda. Okay, next slide. Generally, these are just the sort of bullet pointed rights of the public under the Brown Act. Have meetings open and accessible to the public, access to all agendas of those meetings and the documents that have been distributed to you all for your decision making. They have the right to video or audio record any public meeting and inspect any recordings of those meetings made by the agency. Of course, we publish all that on the website almost immediately, so it's always available. And they have the ability to attend without any preconditions. So they don't actually have to tell you the name, even though we'd like them to identify themselves by partner. They don't have to. They don't have to sign a sign-in sheet.
Oh.
No preconditions to participate.
So what about filling out cards?
This came up in one of our site visits where an attendee was filming us in the tour. The property owner said no, which we technically it's a public meeting, right?
Yeah.
So, and again, we didn't know what to say other than this is the property owner and we can conclude this meeting right now. I think that's how we did it.
We're
going to conclude this meeting.
We adjourned.
We adjourned it and said, the meeting's over. This is property and we left. But legally, they can film on someone's public property in an open meeting like this.
As long as it's we go all the way back to the beginning of what qualifies as a meeting, and if you're together physically or via technology for the purpose of discussing board business, then it's a meeting. If a private property owner is allowed that meeting based on their property, then
they were actually opening themselves up to the video. I think in that case, it wasn't clear. They didn't know that. It wasn't clear to them. I think Derek ended it well. Okay, we're going to adjourn.
I agree. At that point, the private property owner is essentially rescinded their...
Yeah,
they're fair. The property, so you have to... another way to do it would just be to go one-by-one. That would be a meeting. And so that person is going to come video. So if you know there's going to be someone that is very interested in the goings on,
we're in public forum right now. Correct.
Correct. Yeah. We'll take public comments and wrap up on this one. Okay, next slide. So we're just drilling down a little bit. They have the right to address the board in any regular or special meeting before you conclude and take action on the item. So at any time before that, you can do public comment right away. You can do a staff presentation and questions, which is what you do, or any time before you conclude and take action on it.
Well, what about contacting us outside of a convened meeting? Like, I get emails. I have no idea if they got my email from folks that have participated in these meetings in the past as a public speaker.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. I wouldn't respond to them.
No, I don't, but it's annoying.
Hey. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
But we have no way to enforce.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not really, that's not necessarily a Brown Act issue.
No.
If it becomes harassment, that's a thing.
Yeah.
It
doesn't rise to that level.
But, just generally someone saying, hey, about this issue and why I'm feeling to be on. I think you can probably ask staff to respond to them and say, this is the appropriate channel for those comments. Here's the ac.gov email address.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
Their personal email address isn't necessarily the most appropriate.
Yeah, I don't see that. I have an ac.gov.
Well, you can get it.
You do, yeah. You
do. Oh, I do. Oh, it's never been.
Okay, so with saying that, when I was on the planning commission, we actually had business cards with our name on it that said, the County Planning Commission, here's your email. And then so when you're somewhere, someone asks you a question, how many elephants are over there? You know, I don't know, but here's my business card, email me the question and get a whole staff and we're looking at that. It's very simple, cut and dry. So maybe we could work on that. And I've done before.
We did look into, so it was something with the access codes of how we could actually access those emails through our personal computers. It was an access code thing when I inquired about.
Well, the business card with my email from you at ac.gov.
Yeah.
And then it's very simple.
Yeah.
Well, so Damien, maybe we could take an action item to get all of us email.
You have to
email. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. That'd be helpful. Thank you.
Aaron, do you have a lot more of these? Or are we almost done?
We got about 10 more.
Next slide. About 10 minutes.
Next slide. Acts of public comment specific that is concerning it's on the agenda or general attention on public comment period time. So it's any item that's within the board's subject matter jurisdiction doesn't have to be on the agenda. Next slide. This specific public comment, as we've talked about, must occur during the period when the board is discussing that agenda item and must occur before the board concludes and takes action on that. Next slide. General public comment, on the other hand, may occur at any time in the meeting. You have an agenda, I think it's towards the end. It's limited to matters within the board's jurisdiction, even if not on the agenda. Members can't respond subsequently in that context. And at special meetings, it's done. Next slide. Rights of the public speaker. They have a right to equal time. They have a right to criticize policy body members and staff.
And they do.
Yeah. Next slide. They are up to 3 minutes. The chair can reasonably limit total public comment. It just has to be applicable to all commenters. And they have the public has no right to a response from the policy body or its members or staff. Next slide. Board chair has the ability to control unruly speakers, to impose a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction on participation. And he can go so far as to excluding unruly speakers from the forum if it's necessary to allow business to continue, the business of the board to continue.
With saying that, let's say we're listening to a case, whatever, we're listening to something. And then all of a sudden, the guy that already spoke in his 3 minutes stands up and starts talking in factual statements. But we don't really want to hear it because we're not understanding if it is factual or if it's not, because we really don't know. And he's saying, I know there was 11 elephants on that road at 10 o'clock. Can't you just say, hey, we're done. This is closed. We're not in public comment anymore. And right. Is that how you run that meeting, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If that person has been allowed in their public speaking.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Or you go, okay, sign a card, get up here and speak for 3 minutes. Yeah. Okay.
You know, you be within your discretion to say, woo-woo. We'll ask a question of you. We'll hear from you in our deliberations, but they don't have the right to additional public comment just because
they want to spout off.
Okay.
So, what's the proper way to handle it though? Because Frank's bringing up a good point. So, there's folks in the audience, and then they're hearing other public speakers, and now a new question occurs to them, and they have already used their 3 minutes, and they're just, you know, voicing it.
And why are they yelling?
Yeah.
You go, hey. Yeah. Why are they yelling? Hey, you so, already had your 3 minutes.
And we kind of want to answer it. So,
yes.
So what is the proper procedure for handling that?
Well, if you hear a question from the show and you want an answer, you can always ask them during your recording period.
We could restate the question.
Right, yeah, restate the question. Okay. If someone is truly being disruptive, look at me and then be that guy and say, not say, sir or ma'am, everybody's live in 3 minutes. Taking away time from people who are speaking is unfair. So, okay. Speakers for me.
Okay.
Thank you. But you know, it's important.
Yeah,
it's sometimes it's emotional and hard and fast. Maybe it depends on the human and the day. Okay, next slide. Closed session. It's very unlikely that this board would have a closed session, but if there's a desire to have a closed session, just reach out to me and we can.
But you gotta agendize it.
So you have to agendize that it's closed, and you have to agendize the reason why it's closed. And there are about four general reasons: personnel, litigation, negotiations for real property, all in favor negotiations. So it's unlikely that this board would ever be involved in those items. But that's generally how you can close a public meeting to the public during a closed session. The next slide. Okay. Yes, so we talked about what the repercussions are. There are criminal penalties that are written into the code. Willful violations can be punishable by misdemeanor. So, you know, if you do it on purpose, you're intentionally trying to deprive the public of knowledge or information, punishable by misdemeanor. Next slide. Other potential penalties are, you know, invalidation of the action. Court can enjoin or provide declaratory relief to stop violations. Disciplinary action is very general. I'm not sure what disciplinary action there might be, except just like, or
yeah, but anyway. It might be in public reprimands.
Yeah, or just in orders. And then if the county gets sued, obviously, that's who would get sued if there's a draft violation.
Yeah.
And there's potential attorney's fees and costs for grant violations if we lose. And then, you know, the grand jury might want to get involved and he never wants to get involved in here. Okay, next slide. This is separate from the Brown Act. In 2024, the county enacted a code of ethics for all boards and commissions, including this one. The goal is to promote, you know, the common good as being the hallmark of decision making. There's 16 maxims that it establishes for achieving that goal. Slide. These are some highlights. To promote public confidence in the county government through your actions, to recognize and support the public's right to know the public's business, to involve residents in decision making and welcome their points of view, respond to the public in ways that are complete and clear and easy to understand, and be a good listener, carefully considering all opinions and points of view. So those are examples, and in the fine print down there, it says that there's a full list of the code of ethics provided at the end of this presentation, but for some reason I left it out, so I printed them out. And it's also available for the public if they want them on the stand.
And are we going to get a copy of your charts?
You can just print them out and give them to us next time. It's easy. I don't need an email.
And take one and hand them down to be sure. Is there a hyperlink in the agenda to the?
There may be a hard one to get that and just come to you.
Oh, I can look.
There is being in tax. Yes.
So it's linked to the agenda.
Oh.
So you can get it that way.
Okay.
Do you want me to send it to you?
Just bring it next time. Okay. It's the easiest way for me.
All right. Last slide. Yes. Any other questions?
Oh, that was helpful.
No, that was helpful.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you. Well done.
Yeah, this is tricky stuff, and so that's why we do this for so often. I don't pressure everybody. We all put it.
Thank you. Thank you.
And
all right. Yes. Is there any public comment on item number two?
There are no hands raised. Thank
you, Dean. Moving on to item K, which is staff comments and correspondence.
There are no staff comments and correspondence.
Thank you. And then item L is board of councilmen's comments and reports.
I have nothing to do.
Thank you. And then that brings us to adjournment.
Okay.
Oh,
no, you.